podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris Russell, your host. This is John Vaughn, also known as John from the Poi. I'm the guest announcer this week. When you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast, come visit me at runnewengland.blogspot.com or search Run New England on iTunes for my video blog, and we'll all see the beauty and history of New England and ponder the question, when does Chris Russell sleep? I believe it's only on airplanes on his way to Switzerland or California or wherever a red eye will take him. So, and wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on then, let's go for a run.
Chris Russell, Joe Bears from Denver, Colorado, calling in to do my script here for you. My audition, if you will. Just listened to your last episode. It was great, and I'm getting ready to run a duathlon this weekend, and then after that I've got my first altitude marathon on May 17th, so I'm pretty psyched. I don't have a blog or a podcast or anything. I'm just a fan, but you can find me on Twitter at 262Gator, because I'm a University of Florida graduate, and that's where you get the Gator. Okay, Chris, here you go. Here's my Shatner. Hopefully I make it. If not, I understand. I'll try and get the next one.
All right, Chris, you owe me one for this. I'm at work, and I snuck away to get this done, and I'm going to send it to you.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Stardate 2522. We have come in contact with a sentient alien race. Mr. Spork and I have beamed down to the planet's surface to investigate. Spork, what do you make of this?
They seem to be a race of beings in perpetual motion. It is as if they cannot stop, or they will perish.
Clearly we must investigate further. Star Command needs the Podonium crystals that are hidden in this planet's mantle.
Perhaps we should try to communicate, sir.
Affirmative. That may be our best option. Excuse me. Yeah. Excuse me! Whoa. Damn it, Spork! They won't stop running around so that we can communicate. How do we get the damn things to stand still?
May I suggest that we stun one individual with our phasers and take them back to the ship?
Oh, genius. That way we can isolate them without doing any harm. Bones! Is he coming around yet?
Yeah, he's coming to now.
Oh, easy now. We aren't going to harm you. We just want to ask some questions. What's wrong with him, Bones?
Damn it, Jim. Can't you see? I'm only a doctor. I think this life form has to keep moving forward, or his entire physical being begins to break down.
Impressive! You've got some good instruments here to figure that out.
No, we just have to keep the plot brief. But we've got to get him moving again. Or he'll die.
But I've got to have those crystals.
Captain, perhaps I have a possible solution.
Oh, I'm impressed, Spork. Now that we've got him on the treadmill, we can talk to him and get the information we need. Now then, what can you tell us about these crystals?
Hey, how far to the next aid station? And so the crew of the starship Swoosh discovered the Potasoid, an alien race based entirely around the metaphor of ultra running. Stay tuned for next week's episode, where the crew explores the water planet Splush with its fantastic triathlete race.
All right, so here I am in the Los Gatos River Park in Campbell, California. Some of those West Coast people were supposed to meet me here, but they're all talk. So I'm going to go up and run for an hour or so. Not feeling real aerobic today, so it's probably a good thing I'm not having anybody with me. Because, you know, they all, for some reason, they feel they want to impress me or whatever. But somehow I've got this legend of being 10 feet tall, running with an oxen on my back. These guys fishing here. I wonder what they're fishing for. I see a lot of fishing. I don't see a lot of catching. A lot of Canadian geese. Ooh, and they're mating, too. So, oh, look at the little goslings. Oh, they're so cute. But don't attack me. I don't want your kids. Listen, so we have a little bit of an aviary detente here. I don't really want to get bit. It's cool. You stay on your side of the path, I'll stay on my side. So yeah, I was supposed to run with Shelly, but she bagged. Maybe I'll be here later for a beer. I don't even know where this path goes, so you got a nice restroom here. I mean, the says I'm supposed to buy a ticket for the park, but there's nobody there. And the machine only takes $1 bills, and it's $6. So what's the percentage of people who show up with six $1 bills in their pocket? And it only takes a Visa card. I don't have a Visa card. So I might have a $50 ticket when I get back. See if I can expense it. What's going on? Oh, swans. Swans are cute. It's not beautiful. About 71 degrees. You know, it's California. 71 degrees, slight breeze. I'm going to run north. I'm going to run into the wind. And so I left all my stuff in the car. I hope I don't get broken into. I kind of tried to disguise it by draping my dirty underwear over it, you know? Try to dissuade them. Got a nice bathroom here where I could change. So that was a little scary, too. But what can you do, man? I'm a big boy. So when you travel, moral of the story, go out and explore. Try to meet people. Find some cool thing to do. So I'm going to go run now. We'll check in later.
Hello, my friends. This is Chris, and welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast. We got a great show for you today. We're going to interview running legend Joe Henderson, who's been writing books about running since before I was born. And we get some other great audio, some other great stuff. Hope everyone is having a great week. I know many of you have completed or are competing in races around this time of the year. So best of luck or congratulations, depending on how it gets going. And remember to keep moving forward. It's great to be racing. Racing is a great learning experience. Learn a lot about yourself by racing. I did some mental inventory this morning, or actually yesterday when I was out running, because people always ask me how many marathons I've run, and I seriously don't know. So it's not as many as you would think, though. So I not counting ultras and training runs, I think I've run 23 marathons, because I counted 11 Bostons, 4 Bay States, 2 Cape Cods, 2 Hyannis, then I ran the old Ocean State, I ran Chicago once, I ran a trail marathon in Maryland. I ran the Manchester City Marathon last year, and I ran the Atlanta Marathon this year. So that makes 23. And it's really only 21 if you take out the two DNFs I've posted. I DNF'd once at mile 13 at the Bay State at the half, and I bailed at mile 15 of Hyannis once. In both those cases, I was running for a time, and I could tell I wasn't going to make the time, so I just pulled up so I could go and run another day, not waste my legs. So, yeah, I don't say this to impress you, because I've never really run to collect marathons, you know, like so many bottle caps in a can. Just think it's interesting. They were all great races, and really, I've only run Boston and enough races to qualify for Boston over the last 10, 12 years, so it's not epic. So anyhow, the best out of those was Boston 1998, where I posted a 3:06 finish. That was my zenith. Been all downhill since then. But I'm making up in quality what I lack in quantity. So particular congratulations go out to longtime listener Ari Garonsky, who ran a PR at the New Jersey Marathon with a 3:54 and change. Nice job, Ari. And make sure you call in, leave me some audio and intro. You know, do the intro for me for your... And tell us about your run, Anski, run blogspot.com blog for the show. And also new over the last couple of weeks, Megan, the vegan running mom, started a podcast called Run Vegan Run. So you can check that out on iTunes. And how come if we say vegetable, we don't say vegan? How come it's vegan? I don't know. So, okay, I'm losing altitude, and my jet lag is catching up with me, and I've got a big weekend of catching up to do. So thank you, my friends, the Not Ready for Primetime Run, Run, Live players there. My friends Joe Bears and Newman for throwing that Star Trek thing together, you know. Hey, I blame it on the writer. So anyhow, I'm losing altitude. Let us get on with the show.
And now for the equipment check.
Hello, fellow runners, and thank you, Chris, for giving me some time on your podcast. My name is Louis Kakaret, and I'm the founder of eRunners.com. And today I'm here to announce the launch of our website. It's e-runners.com. So it's a social network website dedicated for runners. And here I want to tell you a little bit more on how you can use runners. So first, you create a profile, you put your information there, and you can share it with your friends. You can find a running partner and trash talking. Also, you can upload your workout from your Nike Plus iPod or your Garmin watches. We have created a very simple system to upload your runs from your watches. Everyone can do it easily, and it's compatible with all the Nike Plus and Garmin. Once you have uploaded your data, you can visualize your speed, your heart rate, elevation, and all kind of cool graphics. You can also create some challenge on eRunners with your friends, see who is the fastest, who runs the farthest, and all of the data used is the data you upload, so it's actual data from your workout. And soon you also will be able to look for clubs and events in your area, which is just cool if you want to boost your training. But our main goal of community is to create a large community of runners where they can communicate and enter the training, but most importantly, have fun and do some trash talking. So you can go now to www.e-runners.com and sign up for free, have some fun trash talking. Thank you very much.
And now for our featured interview.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Chris. How are you today?
Good. I'm going to read your quick bio here because, you know, there might be one or two runners out there who don't know who you are.
I imagine there's a lot of them who don't. I've been around a long time, but I've also sort of drifted away from the writing side of it in the last few years for good reasons, which we can get to.
So Joe Henderson has written 27 books on running and countless magazine articles. He authors Joe's Journal column for Marathon and Beyond, and was for more than 30 years a columnist and editor at Runner's World, and that's how I got familiar with your training theories as well. And he's a veteran of more than 700, I'm sure way more than 700 races. And Joe teaches running classes at the University of Oregon in Eugene, where else? And coaches a local marathon team, and he posts a weekly column on his website, which is joehenderson.com. Does that sum it up? And
that's compressing a long life into the essentials. So yeah, that's pretty much what I've done, and it's done things as recently as last Sunday. We had our local marathon here in Eugene, and I was coaching 45 people in it, and felt like a proud father as I watched them run.
Yeah, you've been running since before I was born, Joe. Not to make you feel old, but you got started in the late 50s.
Well, I celebrated last year my 50th running anniversary, and fittingly enough, I started running on April Fool's Day of 1958, and I dropped out of my first race, and I could have dropped out of running completely at that point, but something brought me back and has kept me coming back all these years, and I've seen pretty much, as a runner, have done sort of everything that can be done as a runner, and at this stage of my life, I think just the daily runs are the most satisfying.
Yeah, and the coaching, right, and the giving back.
Oh, the coaching, certainly, but personally, it's my own running, and I think that I get the most satisfaction now out of the coaching. I had my years as an author and as a columnist. I still do some columns. I'm not saying I've stopped writing by any means, but the writing has kind of taken a back seat now, especially the speaking. I used to travel a lot on the running circuit and speak at races around the country, and that is certainly, it's almost disappeared since I started teaching and coaching runners.
Right.
It's been about 5 years now that I've been coaching a marathon training team, and close to 10 years since I've been teaching running classes, and that's nice because it lets me stay home, lets me deal with the runners here locally, and it lets me deal with a generation that's much, much younger than myself. Most of the, well, the college classes, the students are typically the normal college age, 18 to 22, and my own children are older than that right now. And then with the marathon team, I get the whole realm, the whole spectrum. I get all the way from 19, 20-year-olds up to people in their 60s like myself.
That's cool. So, I mean, you've talked and written on running for a long time. If you could sum up your basic training philosophy, you know, what would it be, you know, in 100 words or less? What's your basic training philosophy?
I think taking a long-term view is the main thing. I wrote a book long ago, which is either well-known or infamous or notorious, called Long Slow Distance, LSD.
Right.
I think the long in that really applies as much long in terms of years as it does long in terms of miles. And so I try to emphasize to people that, yes, the short-term goals are important, but the long-term is most important to keep running. And I tend to be fairly low-tech and low-intensity, both, and low-key, I guess you'd also add to that in my approach. And that's what I practice, but also what I preach, in a sense, through writing and through coaching is to ration out. The hard efforts are certainly important, but to treat them as a prescription item where they're in small, well-spaced doses rather than every day, because that seems to be the quickest way for a person to drive himself or herself out of the sport is either through injury or burnout from too much hard stuff too fast.
Yeah,
too often. Yeah, well,
you're absolutely right. You know, and I can almost draw you a curve of the new runner experience, you know, where they come in and they get it, and then they start doing more and faster, more and faster, more and faster until they're injured, and then they either go through the curve, you know, a couple more times and drop out of the sport, or they learn to take a long-term view of it and sort of run rationally.
Well, I've been through all that myself. I have made every mistake that can be made by a runner, and some of them, because it didn't get through my thick head soon enough, I've made them over and over again and survived it. And I'm not saying I can help people not make any mistakes, because I think actually some of the mistakes that people make are important. I've often said that you don't really become a runner until you've had a serious injury that threatens your running, and that once you come back from that, you often come back a little smarter, but you also come back with a new appreciation of what running really means to you. That the races are nice, great, it's nice to set PRs, it's nice to go longer distances, but what's even nicer is just being able to get out there and run. And I think an injury, a layoff, helps us realize that what is really most important.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I had a friend of mine who just, you know, is a cross country, a lot of us runners in high school and then come back to it in the 30s or 40s, and he had done that whole meteor curve where he went from his first marathon to a bunch of sub-3 marathons in 3 years. And I said, you know, you're going to get injured, but it's going to be the best thing that ever happened to you. So, sure enough,
and I
right?
Think, and you're right. But what's sad is when somebody gets injured and they say, this running is not for me, I'm going to move on to whatever's next. Worst of all, move on to nothing, which
right.
is losing the physical activity completely.
Yep.
But I see the same things happening again and again, and I smile at some of them. That see the young people, and young, that doesn't necessarily mean young in years, it means young in experience, making the same mistakes that I made, going through the same evolution that I went through, and all I can hope to do is get them through some of the low spells faster, because I do have some answers, and
yep.
Just based on experience and often sometimes bad experience on my part, then I can help them compress that learning curve into a smaller amount of time than the 30 or 40 or 50 years that it's taken me to learn.
So what do you think has changed in your, you know, in the sport and in your philosophy, you know, over the couple of decades you've been doing this?
Well, it's almost everything has changed. I suppose several big changes have been, number one, the revolutionary change that have taken place in training. And I don't really even mean becoming more scientific. When I started running, everything was fast. Everything was on the track. It was all interval training.
Right.
And the big revolution in that regard came in the early 1960s from Arthur Lydiard of New Zealand, who put people on the roads, out on the trails, doing long distances.
Yep.
And building endurance first, endurance base, and then topping that off with a small but important amount of speed training. That changed everything. It changed, not only changed the results at the top, all athletes, all records started improving immensely, but it also improved the people at the bottom levels. People who were training on the roads, for instance, started running road races. They found they liked running long distances, maybe more than running on the track, and this helped create the first running boom where enormous numbers of people were running, you know, 5Ks, 10Ks,
right,
half marathons, marathons. And so that leads to the next big revolution in the sport that I've seen. That's the explosion in numbers.
Yeah, and there's a similar, you know, because I was alive in the first running boom too. There's a similar boom going on right now with the marathons and the whole entertainment marathon sort of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. We could get into all that. The first boom and the second boom are very different. One of the differences is that there's not nearly the emphasis now on performance that there was in the first boom. Most of the people in the first boom were young men. Young meaning, the mid-30s and below.
Right.
And I'm a pre-boom runner in the sense of when I started, but when I started running road races, I was definitely a boomer. And most of the people were like me. They were trying to qualify for Boston, run under 3 hours, and the women hadn't yet come in to the sport in great numbers. So that was the first boom, and I can get to the second boom in just a moment, but I want to say here that because it fits chronologically, the biggest change that I have seen in my running life in the look of a marathon field or look of a road race field is the women.
Yep.
And I happened to be at Boston the year that Catherine Switzer integrated, so to speak, the marathon. Her race got a lot more attention than mine for some reason.
Yeah.
But I was there on that day when history was made, and now we're at the point where most road race fields are the rightful 50% or sometimes even more women.
Right.
But the second boom was very different, and that was one of the ways it was different, that far, far more women involved in the second boom. The second boom was much bigger than the first, but the activity also slowed.
Right.
There wasn't nearly the emphasis on, even though it was still a wonderful accomplishment to qualify for Boston, that wasn't the be-all and end-all anymore. And there are, as you say, the events became as much social events or party events as they were athletic events. And I'm not saying this is bad, but because the athletic aspect is still there, but the dominant aspect of many of the events is this enormous size. There's the coming of, it's kind of a something that runners, that running directors don't talk much about, but some events are almost as much walking or run-walk events as they are running or racing events now.
Yeah.
The fields have grown, in other words, more from the back than they have grown from the front, because that's where the population is. The slower population, the runners are bigger, there are more women, they're older in general than they were in the first boom, and they're certainly slower. I can give you an example that my first Boston I ran, I was really worried about making the cutoff time, which was 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
Because there were very few runners at that time who ran slower, in quotes, than 3.5 hours. And I was so scared that I ran 40 minutes faster than the cutoff time, but I didn't know that at the time I was going to do that. And in Boston that year, there were 607 entrants. I thought, my crystal ball being so cloudy, I thought that this was the biggest race I would ever see in my life.
Wow.
600 people. And there were two women. One entered officially, Catherine Switzer, but there was another woman, Bobby Gibb, in the same event. And now, of course, Boston, you need qualifying times, and
so
you didn't then.
Did you guys start in Ashland that year? Was that the couple of years?
No, we started in Hopkinton. It was a different location in Hopkinton, but it was still in Hopkinton at that time.
So you did the full 26.2. So that's good.
I'm not quite so old, but they still ran 24 miles. So yeah, they ran the full 26 and 26.2, and at that time the field was so small they would all fit into the Hopkinton school gym.
Yeah.
The whole field with room to spare.
Right, and the qualification standard
then was if you had, I think it was maybe at most $10 to enter, and a stamp to put on your envelope, and that was how you qualified for Boston in that year. And of course now it's 25,000 with qualifying times, and I don't know if they turned anybody away this year because they reached their limit in size, but there are of course lots of races that do.
Yeah,
and
it did.
It was enormously gratifying for somebody like me who's been around the sport for a long time to realize that we weren't so crazy after all, or maybe there's a lot more crazies now than there were back then, is that the world has kind of caught up with us. I come from an era when people would throw beer cans at runners on the road or shout, "What are you doing running around in your underwear?"
Yeah.
And you're almost so intimidated you only wanted to go out at night under the cover of darkness to run or to put on long pants because people would make fun of you otherwise. And to see that how accepted, and not only accepted but even honorable, this activity is now.
Yep, that's great. That's great. I remember doing your long, slow distance stuff in high school, Joe. So.
No, boy. Well, that's nice. Because the coaches.
Somebody mentioned a phrase to me called instinctual running and having an ear to listen to your body, something that you had talked about. Is that ring a bell?
I can't claim any originality on that. I think I was probably quoting my greatest mentor and friend in the sport, George Sheehan, who talked a lot about that. George was a great inspiration to me personally, but more importantly too, he's probably the best writer / speaker there has ever been in the sport. And he's been gone for 15 years now, but still I would rank him up there as being the top person. And George talked a lot about that, listening to your body, running instinctively, not being so hung up on splits or heart rates and things like that, and just letting, because your body's had a long time to evolve into knowing what to do. And if you listen to it, it pretty much tells you what is right. And so it's a hard lesson to get across now because running has become so scientific, but I think there's still a lot of validity to that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of distractions now with all the new devices and electronics, and a lot of times I'll tell people to leave the stuff at home a couple times a week and just listen to your breathing and your heart rate, because you'll learn a lot about yourself.
Absolutely, and that I like your term distractions. I at one time or another have used all of the devices, and I'm not saying I'm against them, like heart monitors and iPods and so on. I draw the line at carrying my cell phone on around. I want to get away from my cell phone, so I don't do that. But I find that the best runs often are still the simple runs, and the more complicated our lives become, and which they have a way of doing as we get older. I think the simpler running needs to be. It needs to be an escape from all the complications rather than just another complication added on top of the ones we already have.
Yeah, when training starts feeling like another job, you're doing something wrong.
Right. I think that had a lot to do with the genesis of LSD-type running, too, for me, was that it had become so complicated in college, as a college athlete, that I was not enjoying running anymore at all. It was a big stress, both the physical stress of doing it, but the psychological stress of running races in college. And I was looking for an alternative, and never was thinking about it being a way to improve my running. Just the runs I really liked in college were the runs I took on the days when I wasn't feeling good. In other words, if I had a little injury and just took a nice easy run, or the day after a meet took an easy run, those were the ones I really liked. And what I decided to do after college graduation is just only do the runs I liked. And they got longer and longer and led to a marathon and led to all the things that follow. I know for certain that if I had tried to continue running the way I had been running before, the running wouldn't have lasted past my early to mid-20s.
Yeah, that's great. So what would your since we have your coaching advice for a couple of decades here, what would your advice be today for your, you know, your group of beginners or mid-packers or advanced runners that that you're coaching?
Well, the thing we found with our marathon group is that we limit it to one big day a week and take the emphasis off of mileage per week and put it on the length of the long run, which keeps moving up. And we've had, we go up to 21 miles in our training for the marathon. And we've had 100, I think as of last Sunday, we had 170 individuals go through the program, and we've had 170 of them, every one of them, in other words, has finished. So that's the first goal, and it's, in other words, the program seems to be working. It's not high mileage, so we don't even count miles, but I say if you can get the long run in, that's going to take care of you pretty well. It doesn't mean necessarily you're going to set your PR or you're going to qualify for Boston, but many of them, after they successfully complete their first one, do go on to greatly improve their PRs. And as I think I told you at the start, we had three last Sunday who qualified for Boston. Interestingly enough, and this is a little bit off topic here, but I will add it, a lot of older runners tend to take rather jaundiced look at the young people, I mean really young people, and people in their teens, and say, oh, they're not interested in running anymore. This has become a mature person sport. It's what you do in your 30s and 40s, and the kids are more interested in their video games and their and the college students in their drinking parties on Saturday night, things like that. Well, the three people who qualified for Boston last week were 19, 19, and 22.
Yeah.
And all college students. And that makes me feel really good because I had some connection with them, for one thing, but more importantly, it tells me that the future, if we find enough people like that, the future is in good hands in the sport.
Yeah.
Eventually, age is going to, no matter if we're lifers or not, if those of us who are lifers, eventually that life is going to reach its natural end, and we got to have people on the younger end of the scale replacing the attrition at the far end of the scale. And it's good to see that this is happening. It gives me a very good feeling about the young. Not that I had a horrible feeling about them before, but being in contact with them every week now, or something like my university classes, it's every day. I realize that at least some of the young people are interested in running for the same reasons that you and I were interested in running at that age.
Yeah,
to improve their performance. They're willing to work. They're willing to put in the effort and the training, and they're also looking for guidance and inspiration. And I think that's the main thing that we as older folks can do. I shouldn't be calling you an older person. I don't know how old you are, but you're older than college age, I would guess.
Yeah, you can call me an older person. I think, I'm with you on that. I think one of the things we can do successfully is just to show everyone the joy that we have or have had and will have in the sport, whether it's at a competitive level or not, right?
Yeah, I don't think we have to necessarily do it with words. I mean, that's what you and I kind of make our living at, but I think example is even better. I just had an email exchange with someone today who both of his sons are now running, one in middle school and one in high school, and he never said, you should run, you should be a runner, but he set a good enough example for them that they wanted to run.
That's great. That's exactly what I mean. All right, Joe, we're reaching the end of our tether here.
I've enjoyed talking to you. The time went very fast, and I look forward to hearing more of your interviews on your website. So thank you very much.
Yeah, you got any links or anything, people, any events or anything you want to let people know about?
No, I think that you mentioned my website, and I have I post a column every week. And what it's been lately, primarily, is I've been writing a memoir, and it's not just my musings of my early days, but I summarize at the end of those lessons that I have learned during that period of my life that still are in play today. So I think that's the part that that your listeners would get some value out of. But I have more than 500 columns archived there, and a lot of those are from my days at Runner's World, which ended about about 5 years ago. But I think a lot of those have, I'd like to think anyway, that they have some timeless value to them, because they have some practical and, if I can use a fancy word, philosophical lessons to teach even today.
Oh, that's great. All right, we'll check that out.
Okay, Chris, thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
Hey, Chris, this is Sean from Trilogy Running. I caught your last episode, and since you're getting into mountain biking, I actually know a little bit of something about mountain biking, and you always called in and gave us little tips, so I figured I'd call you and give you a little tip. I think you got the right idea on how to go up a hill, making sure your butt's on the seat, but when you go downhill, that's when it gets kind of dangerous. So what you need to do is you get your butt off the seat and almost lean back to where you're kind of behind the seat and almost to where the seat's actually kind of in your gut a little bit, so that all of your weight's on the back wheel, so that front wheel's light. And in theory, if the front wheel's light, it'll ride over anything. And once that front wheel gets over it, the back wheel's just going to follow. Because the story that I was told when I started mountain biking was that if you don't do that and you stay on the seat or you stand up, what you do is when that front wheel catches something and you're starting to launch over the handlebars, go ahead and take your helmet off. And as you're flying over your handlebars, take your helmet off and kind of hook them on the end of the handlebars so that when you crash into the ground, you don't mess up a perfectly good helmet because you're an idiot. That's the way I was taught. Another thing that you can do to help prevent stuff like that is you can actually adjust the amount of pressure on your brakes. And so what I did and a bunch of people I rode did was is your front brakes, we made it a little looser to where if you squeeze the back brakes, you would actually lock up the brakes and slide. Well, the front brakes, you could never squeeze them hard enough to where they would ever lock up. They would just kind of gently slow you down, almost like they're at half or three-quarter strength. Anyway, there's a tip. I'm interested to hear how it goes. All right, talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, folks, that's it. You have come to the frayed end of another Run, Run, Live podcast. That's episode 69 in the can, and I didn't make any jokes about episode 69. Be proud of me. I'm continuing to cross over to biking, and my thighs are starting to get those big, like, drumstick-looking bike thighs. And my legs are kind of tired because I've been trying to keep up my running, too. And my diet is a non-diet at this point. I'm stuck around 190 to 194 pounds. I don't know. But I looked into the 100 push-ups website, and I'm going to try that the next couple of weeks. But it seems easy, so I'm going to do the 200 sit-ups and the 200 squat programs, too. You know what the heck? It's almost swimsuit season. I have to, you know, be wary of the paparazzi when I'm down at the Cape. By the way, if you want a summer rental in Harwich on Cape Cod this summer, shoot me a note. I got a house down there. And I have some other great shows lined up. At some point, I'm going to talk to John Bingham as soon as I find his email that I lost in the pile of 800 emails I have in my Yahoo account right now. And I also talked this week with some folks over at Vibram. They make those run glove things, but they also make soles, and they want to come on the show and talk about soles and potentially give away some shoes. So that'll be cool. Most importantly, I have next week the famous Running Bra-a-Palooza episode. And I've got Eva and Joanne, to help me interview Gracie of Gracie's Running Bras. So send me all your running bra questions. You know, we were going to do this interview this week, but they just couldn't support me. And I felt a little let down. I was pointed and upfront with them, but I was unable to restrain myself. So don't let your spirits get all saggy. We're going to reconnect next week with an interview that is positively uplifting and separates the girls from the boys. Music today is from an interesting group named the Boneless Children Foundation called Stars for Everyone, or Stars for Anyone, sorry. So enjoy, have a great week, and I'll see you out there. Ciao, baby.
Let's all get some stars for anyone, for you, for anyone who wants to, and everyone wants you. Oh, let's all shine a light on anyone, on you. You show them that you want you. You can help us shine if you want to.
Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.